plate a potential nugget.
And let's talk about that, Whitney. Let's talk about the, let's say, the bottom of a new S-curve. And in a way, when I work with leaders, I say they're either asking a where to go question or a how to grow question. And picking the next S-curve is a bit like a where to go question, right? Which mountain do you climb? And how should leaders think about identifying the next S-curve for themselves, either internally or externally, right? I'd love your take on what are some of the mistakes you see leaders make here. And the reason I ask this is, to your point earlier, the slope of the S-curve at the bottom is actually quite slow, or quite low, rather. It takes a while for you to get feedback on how well you're doing. So you don't know if it's the right S-curve, but it's still yet to take off, or the wrong S-curve. So how should we think about just picking the right S-curve?
Oh, there's a lot of really good questions in there. Okay, first of all, I love that. Where to go or how do you grow? Fantastic. Okay, so let me answer that question in two parts. So let's start with, first of all, the first accelerant of personal disruption. So there's seven accelerants of personal disruption. And the very first one is to take the right risks. And that actually answers both of your questions. It answers both the where to go and the how do you grow question. And so what do I mean when I say take the right kinds of risk? Well, there are two kinds of risk I think about. There's competitive risk and there's market risk. And competitive risk is that you know you've scoped out the market, you've got these projections, you know there's an opportunity, you just have to figure out if you can compete and win. And with market risk is you don't know if there's a market, but if there is a market, if there is an opportunity, then there's no competition. And we know from disruption theory that when you're willing to take on market versus competitive risk, the odds of success are 6 times higher. So you want to, when you're thinking about your business, you do that all the time as a leader. Like, should we, you know, we're going to take on competitive risk if we think we can win, but we also are looking for opportunities to take on market risk because we know the odds of success are going to be higher. So that's something that then for you as a leader and as you're managing your career, you want to think about, well, what does that look like for me in my career? Most of you listening to this podcast have probably taken on a lot of competitive risk and you've competed and won. But if you want to win even more, and you'll find that those instances where you have won even more, you're taking on market risk. You're finding ways to play where no one else is playing. And let me give you an example from my own career that I think will really illustrate this. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on Wall Street and there is a merger. Our bank's acquired and my boss gets fired. And I think they probably would have fired me too, except that I had really strong reviews and I happened to be pregnant at the time. And so you don't tend to fire people that are pregnant with strong reviews. So they're like, what do we do with her? Well, they shove me into equity research, which is basically like going from flying a fighter jet to a cargo plane. So remember that y-axis of success? I moved down that y-axis of success from the 18 to the 15. And once I got there to equity research, it turns out they already had an equity analyst covering the sector that I was supposed to cover, which was cement and construction. So what do I do? How do I take on market risk? How do I play where no one else is playing? Turns out, there were a number of media companies going public at the time. There was no analyst to cover them. So rather than knocking on a cement door that was closed, I built my own media door. And because I built a new door, because I played where no one else is playing and there was a market there, instead of it taking me years to get ranked and get awards as an analyst, I was able to get to the top of the leaderboard in just 1 year. Now, here's the thing for us to really consider as you're thinking about your own career is that when I found a place for me to play where no one else was playing, I also found a place for my organization to play. When you build your own door, you're building a door for your company, for your organization, because the fundamental unit of growth, the fundamental unit of change in any organization is the individual. So that's how you think about this idea of where to go, but also how to grow is you take the right risks and the odds of success are always going to be higher when you're willing to play where no one else is playing as much as possible. One other thing I'll say on that, because I think this is really encapsulate this idea. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, I came across a quote from one of my mentors, Bob Proctor, and here's what he said, amateurs compete, professionals create. Isn't that good? Amateurs compete, professionals create. So that's what I really want you to think about is first accelerant of personal disruption. You take the right risks, you create rather than you compete. And so that's the first accelerant of personal disruption.
For a moment, if we pause and think about the world we are living in and the explosion in the number of possibilities around us, given the exponential growth of technologies and the way things are being connected, I do think it requires a different approach to the way we think about climbing multiple S-curves in our journey. Tarun Khanna of Harvard Business School was earlier on the podcast and he shares an interesting insight.
You know, maybe you lived in the time of the sage Valmiki in India, and there was a certain set of known things. And as a truly wise man or wise woman, as the case might be, you might expect to know, I don't know, 0.1% of things that were known to humankind. I'm making this up, of course.
Sure, I hear you.
And today, with the exponential increase in knowledge, you may know, you know, a vanishingly small number. Maybe it's 0.00001% of things. So the question is, how do you ensure that you have a unique capability to contribute, given this bewildering explosion of knowledge and the tiniest sliver of which you are a master or mistress, right? And I think that puts a real premium on being able to communicate what it is that you have to the rest of the world so that you can facilitate the emergence of combinations with your own skill set. So that's the way I think about it. That specialization isn't going to go away, and it's a pretty straightforward and direct corollary of the fact that you have to specialize to survive because things are developing too fast to do otherwise. Otherwise, you will condemn yourself to mediocrity. But if you over-specialize, then your ability to communicate with people with different specialties is now at a premium so that you can raise the odds that people productively combine with you and find it useful to hang out with you and do things with you so that collectively you will into being new possibilities.
Got it. No, I love the way you frame it as an opportunity to facilitate a combination of new possibilities based on what gives you energy and your uniqueness.
Yeah, and if I may say, I think this really is a mindset issue. You know, confronted with this sort of situation, I think a lot of people would find it, they may not confess to it, but would find it intimidating. And it is intimidating at one level, but the thing that it helps me to remember is that everybody's in the same boat. We're all trying to do the same thing. It's not like that the explosion of knowledge is uniquely disadvantaging your uniqueness, if I may say it that way. And so there's really no reason, there's no upside to being bewildered or befuddled or lost. You just simply get on with it.
Got it.
And I think that mindset is actually quite motivating, and you stop worrying about the fact that you know almost nothing.
If I take my personal context, as a search consultant at Egon Zehnder, I felt senior leaders had access to the best of bankers, consultants, marketing agencies, lawyers, and so on for their business needs, and didn't have anybody for their personal journey. I felt, just like strategy consultants need to help companies with where to play, I felt there was an opportunity to be a trusted sounding board with leaders in helping them solving where to go. Often this is not just a work question and involves understanding the life context, their aspiration, their family situation, and so on. This also requires a piece around assessing the market opportunities. So post Egon Zehnder, I've tried to build a web of trusted relationships with the rest of the search firms so that I can be a quote-unquote sell-side banker to the leader or a sports agent representing the athlete. I feel there's an opportunity at the intersection of the poaching world and the coaching world, and that's the piece I'm trying to build in my journey over the last few years. It's still early days, but I can say that it's been a fulfilling journey to craft something on my own terms to address a market opportunity than being one more player in an established market and participate in a shootout or a fashion parade where people have to make a choice for a coach. It's still evolving and work in progress, but all I can say at this point is that it's been a fun ride so far. Whether there's a product market fit, I guess time will tell.